interesting. I was looking at the official highlights package from the Vuelta, done in English, and they described TJ's crash as, and I'm going to quote it on here, Chris Froome manages to take off with the Spaniard, but America's TJ Van Garderen doesn't have the resources to follow his rivals. And this is as they're showing the crash. And I'm like, resources? That's what did him in? He didn't have the resources? Hey, cycling fans. Thanks for joining us again. This is Tyler Yonke of the Between Two Wheels podcast, episode 10. We're going to do some stage recaps, go over some news and notes from around the world. Also, just do a little bit of preview of the upcoming stages as well. We'll get right into it. First, the big news of the day was a big drug scandal involving a cyclist, Jack Bobridge, Australian. This isn't your typical getting popped for EPO or growth hormone. He was actually selling prescription drugs on the street in Australia. He was a former Olympic champion, been riding on the road, took some like a sabbatical last year, decided he just needed to get away from cycling. I know he had some alcohol issues as well. So it looks like his life just kind of spiraled down. And this was not just I'm selling grandma's, you know, meds to a friend on the street. Evidently it was a big sting where they took in like 60 some people that are going to be taken down in this. So he did get out on bail, but we'll keep you updated on that. News of yesterday's tour on the Vuelta, Carlos Betancourt actually had to abandon the Vuelta due to a fractured ankle and some facial injuries. I saw a picture of him and didn't look so hot. His face was all bandaged up, and he had gone down in the crash with TJ Van Garderen. So, but he'd been actually, you know, he's got a little history of, there's a few years ago showing him in his team jersey, new team jersey in the start of the year, like around when they're introducing the teams. And he is just a pudgy little thing. He's got evidently a weight problem going up and down. So, but he's a good climber when he's taking the weight off. And so this year's Vuelta, he was actually climbing well. He went over the top there with the Froome and Contador. We'll get into that crash a little bit later. But anyway, he had to pull out. Team Cycling Academy, it's an Israeli team. They added Ben Hermans and Rupert Plaza for a 2018 team. So it looks like they're actually trying to make kind of a move up in the world. They were in the Tour of Utah, Colorado Classic, and they do a few. I think they're a high-end continental team, but I think they're trying to move up in the world. And maybe their big attempt this year is the 2018 Giro is actually going to start in Israel. So perhaps they're trying to make a bid, get some bigger riders, move themselves up to actually get a bid into the Giro and get a start in their home country. So it'd be interesting. There is an American that rides on that team. I forgot what his name is, but we can take a look at that and come back to it at some point. I got no update on my little rant about Team Sky and their whole team being vacant at the start of the climb on stage 5. So perhaps I was wrong about a mechanical. Maybe they were just misplaced in there and they came back to the front as needed. That itself would be interesting, how Sky at all missed out on being at the front when they were supposed to be. Another little interesting thing that's coming up is Gianni Moscon. He's the rider for Team Sky that's been kind of pulling at the front lately. And some discussion on whether he's a villain or a redemptive hero. He had been called out for Reza, an African, he's a French guy, he's a black guy that rides for a French team, and evidently Moscon had thrown some racial epithets at him earlier this year, and he got suspended for like 6 weeks, I believe, 6 weeks, 6 months, something like that, and the UCI took no further action because Team Sky came after him, and Reza himself said, you know, he thought the punishment was fine. Gianni Moscon has never really come out and condemned himself or, you know, shown contrition. So there's some little bit of debate as to, you know, how do we treat this guy? You know, I would compare it back to, well, you don't even want to compare this, but he said some bad things. I don't think that's anything that we need in our sport or necessary in life, but, you know, people do, and you have a right to be an asshole. We had the situation with Jonathan Bowyer, where he's basically a kid toucher, and, you know, he's trying to come back from that, and cycling takes him in with open arms, but we're giving Moscon kind of a... It'd be an interesting discussion to have with someone at some point. It's also interesting just to see him coming to the fore, and now people are trying to figure out, do we kind of embrace him? Do we still treat him as this filthy person? You know, I was listening to one podcast where they actually, the cycling podcast, where Richard Moore actually called him, you know, said that he had done something for and hadn't really talked about his crime. Well, in this U.S. at least, just being an asshole and saying bad things to someone is not a criminal offense. I don't believe it is in France or wherever this took place, but they do have different standards for their freedom of speech. Okay. Roman Bardet, he's also saying he's not a Vuelta prior, or the Vuelta itself is not, the podium is not a priority of his. Be that as it may, that could be an excuse of I'm coming in here, don't really have the fitness that I wanted, or I'm not really performing well. So now we'll just say the podium's not a priority. Then again, like I had mentioned before, he was on the podium at the tour. So, you know, these things come out every day, and it's always interesting to see them making real hard attempts at riding well in the race. And then when things don't go good, you just say, oh, it wasn't to my liking. I really didn't focus on this, which actually plays into the TJ Van Garderen thing. We've seen that even last year and having trouble and kind of coming into different races, even in the Giro, having trouble early on and then, you know, just sitting up and losing 20 minutes on a day. And, you know, his fight back yesterday was actually very impressive. And maybe it's a newer TJ, and, you know, maybe he did come in with full guns blaring and the priority being on the podium. So that will be interesting to see as well. We had Dimension Data. They signed Steve Cummings back for, I think, the next 2 years. They added a bunch of the South African riders, Jay Thompson, Jacob Venter, Johan van Ziel, and Jacques Jans van Rensburg. And then they did get the new signing back, Louis Menchies, who had been with them previously. And then when they had kind of expanded, he went over to the UAE team. Well, he's coming back. Speaking of Menchies' old UAE team, United Arab Emirates, they've reported they had a huge influx of cash, and they're throwing money at some of these people. Dan Martin and Roy Sutherland, two among them, prominent signings. Evidently, Quick Step did not make an overture to Dan Martin to keep him on the team, and part of that is, well, like, they just don't have a team that ever supports a Grand Tour rider, it appears. And Dan Martin evidently got so much money offered from UAE that to even make a comparison to offer wasn't in the works. Today's stage, Merhawi Kudus, we had mentioned him before, an Eritrean of the Dimension Data team. He crashed out about the halfway mark, and it looks like he had possibly damaged his collarbone, and then he did subsequently abandon. The crash was on a flat section. The field was kind of splitting up due to some crosswinds, and he went down. I also saw Larry Warbass, the American national champion, on there go down as well. I looked in the results preliminary. I did not see Warbass's name anywhere. There was no DNF either, so I don't know if he ended up finishing out or if the crash took him out as well. All right, let's get right into it. Start with stage six, Via Real to Segunto, 204 kilometers. That was yesterday's stage. There was five categorized climbs that we talked about, the first being a Cat 3, and then the last climb was a Cat 2, and that started about the 158-kilometer mark, and it finished up to about 168. So it was just inside 10 kilometers, and then there was a daring 30-kilometer finish down into Segunto. So early on, and we'll get just kind of break these into two sections here, but we had the break, they cleared out, the synopsis of that. I'll give you the winner right up here. It was Thomas Marzinski of Lotto Soudal with Paul Poldanski, and then Enric Mas Nicolau. Those three stayed away to the finish, and they went 1-2-3. Then we had Luis Leon Sanchez coming just 8 seconds back, and with Jan Pollock. Those two had been up in the break. Luis Leon Sanchez coming over the final climb and then coming in, he kept sitting up weird, like he didn't really want to work with them. He was the best sprinter of that group, and he obviously had the ability to take them all to the line. And so he was thinking, oh, maybe I'll just sit up and wait for this other group, where he wasn't pulling through. Well, those guys just ended up, you know, cranking away, and they stayed away from him. So good for them. Behind him, you had a group come in right around 26 seconds, Warren Barguil, Froome, Roach, Adam Yates, Chavez, Aru, Nibali, Woods, Contador, Kelderman. They were all the big group there. And then about 43 seconds behind that, you had Kreiswick and Menchies. And they gave TJ another 3 second gap. I think he was just right off the end of that. And he was like 46 seconds back. So let's get into actually what happened on the last climb. So as the race hit the bottom of that last climb, Trek's Peter Stettin had just, he hit the front, had a blistering pace, riding out of the saddle. He looked very good and just started stringing everything out. And he, Peter was actually riding like he was attacking. But right on his wheel was Contador, who then took over for Peter once his energy was all used up. Contador went from that spot basically to the top of the climb with only getting a little help from his other teammate, Pantano, who he ended up joining up with later on, who had been in the break. But Contador pretty much just lit that climb on fire from there on out, hitting warp speed immediately, creating distance between the riders. You can see kind of two GC groups started to form on the climb, and you can see who was kind of breaking out. You had Froome, TJ, Betancourt, Roach, Nibali, Contador, Chavez, Barguil, all were in that front group. And then there was Froome only had his one teammate, Moscon, up there with him. Or maybe it was Walt Poels. I couldn't tell which one, but it was one of those two. Anyway, nearing the summit, about two-thirds of the way up, Contador, like I said, he had joined up with his Jarlo Pantano, his teammate, who had been in the break. And then it was only Froome, TJ, Betancourt, and Jan Polonc, of the UAE rider, in that group. Over the top and on the way down, the lead group came around a corner on a fast descent, and TJ hits the deck. It's this exact spot where two other riders that had been in the break were already crashed out on the side of the road, and they were already nursing their wounds as he comes through there. Watching the crash a few times, it appears that TJ, with his hands on the hood, just hit a pothole, and then his hands just slipped right off the bars. He went kind of over down his chest onto the bars and then slid out sideways. Betancourt took the worst of the whole situation, just crashing right into the back of him. I did see on social media where Peter Stettin has said he had crashed that exact same spot coming down. So obviously it was just a really bad section of road. Interesting, I was looking at the official highlights package from the Vuelta done in English, and they described TJ's crash as, and I'm going to quote it on here, Chris Froome manages to take off with the Spaniard, but America's TJ Van Garderen doesn't have the resources to follow his rivals. And this is as they're showing the crash. And I'm like, resources? That's what did him in? He didn't have the resources? Anyway, TJ then remounts, gets back up into the chase group, and ends up crashing again inside the last 3 kilometers. Evidently, he had to change bikes as well. He comes in just, 17 to 20 seconds behind Froome. I don't think the word, though, resources was the problem. Maybe this was a translation in their wording, but it seems inaccurate, at least at a very minimum. Alberto kept the pressure on going down the final. Froome didn't help, and soon this whole large group comes together. Behind the front leader group, there were two significant GC riders, however. There was De La Cruz and then TJ, with De La Cruz in between TJ, and TJ had formed up with another group. Evidently, TJ is just going from group to group, trying to move up, putting a lot of pressure to regain that, and he was out 40, 50 seconds to a minute at some points, but they just kept creeping back. But then, like I said, in the last 3 kilometers, it looked like he had a flat. He's going through a roundabout, and he hits the deck again. It was actually, to be only down, GC-wise, he's at fifth now at 30 seconds. That was very impressive. I saw a bunch of things on Twitter and social media of other commentators and news people there basically saying, hey, you stay away from the BMC bus today. The TJ was going to be in this bad, foul mood. And then actually TJ's response afterward was pretty upbeat, saying, hey, things happen in 3 weeks. This is the worst that's basically going to come about. My legs felt great. The wrecks weren't all that bad. As far as, at the time he was saying that, who knows if there's tissue damage or whatnot. But he's saying basically, look, things happen. And if this is the worst it's going to be, then so be it. All right, so a few little notes from that stage, the isolation of Froome. So Froome, going up that final climb, he had one rider with him. Like I said, I couldn't tell if it was Moscon or Walt Poels. But either way, that teammate did just a little bit of work and then scooted out to the side. And matter of fact, at one point, it almost looked like he was starting to gap Froome off by trying to stay in between Froome and Contador. So Froome was totally isolated, and his teammates were back behind, I think, once TJ got up and running. They were basically in that group, and I doubt they were trying too hard to pull, the second place rider at the time back up to Froome. So basically he was without teammates, and it could have been a devastating thing if he had gone down. Is this such a problem though? Like I've said before, 30K to the finish, it would have been better, but he's got to follow wheels. And when Contador did have a teammate up the road, but they split out from Pantano as well. So everybody in that sense is somewhat isolated. So you can't just necessarily say that Froome's isolated and not worry about these other guys as well. No one was working with Alberto coming down, and Froome didn't really need to. I mean, you know, like I said, he's isolated, so his teammates behind, they're coming in. He's got really no worries. TJ's blasted off, so that's his number two person. The other guys are in the group with him. He's got really no one to necessarily worry about. I don't think he really wanted to put the hammer down on TJ from the wreck. I don't know if it was because of that, but just he didn't feel the need to, and I don't think he needed to as well. Like I said, TJ was upbeat afterwards. That's actually pretty good to see. I was impressed with his ride no matter what. The fact that he was still pushing on and not just like, you know, throwing in the towel, it's a good thing to see. Very impressed with Contador's ride. To do what he did, just take that ride, that climb on from the bottom to the top. I don't know if he was just trying to show that, hey, look, I had this stomach problem, my legs are fine. But it was enough to shred that field and make a difference. You know, if there wasn't 30K to the finish, you know, the outcome probably would have been even a little bit different. And you know, someone like TJ obviously would have lost more time. Those other riders like Woods, Chavez, they probably wouldn't have come back either. It's also kind of interesting to see on the final climb, there were only three GC riders of note there, the Contador, TJ, and Froome, all seemingly easily able to follow the wheel of Contador. Chavez was distanced, Woods was distanced, Nibali was distanced, Aru was distanced, and it will be interesting to see in the next 2 days coming up how those factors come in and how these riders all basically take in and take on this these steep climbs coming up. All right, stage 7, Illyria to Cuenca, 207 kilometers. I had described this one previously. This route basically just heads due west from the coast straight for Madrid. The race started going uphill right from kilometer zero at 200 meters elevation. It goes all the way out to kilometer 51, where then they're up around 1,000 meters. Then the race is just lumpy and it goes up and down for the rest of the race. All around the 1,000 elevation range, they had two more Cat 3 climbs along the way, however. Okay, so this one, big breakaway. Couldn't tell the full number in there. There was like 37, I think, to begin with. And then it had whittled itself down. Inside the last 20K, the brakes started attacking one another. And they had had around a 7-minute lead. And when then the brake starts going at each other, then the lead actually increased to over 9 minutes. Inside the last 14 kilometer, there was a last Cat 3 climb. And through this village where there's some cobbled stones, streets, the brake then really disseminated and tore the field apart as far as the brake goes. Up the climb, they had rider Mahorich of the UAE team. He went clear, and he was followed by Rojas of Movistar, DiMarchi of BMC, Polanski of Bora Hansgrohe, and then DeGent of Lotto. But Mahorich just kept the pace on, and he started his assault about midway up the climb, and then the group just kept splitting. Back behind, there was a Kaji Ruel rider who went down. And the road, it was through this little village type with the high walled street buildings right next to the street. But it opened up, and all of a sudden he's down. Then they showed a replay, and one of the motorbikes from the caravan clipped him and took him down. I hate seeing that. You never like to see someone's race ended or their chances of the race ending with motor vehicle. And there was no need for this motorcycle to just, you know, kind of come in that close to him. Could have gone way out. They don't have to like blow past him. There was just he and another rider and no one else around. This was totally unavoidable, completely unnecessary, especially with the circumstances of the time. Okay, so over the climb, Mahorich just keeps the pressure on, splitting the remnants. He actually got rid of DiMarchi, and then there was just the three behind him, and he ended up soloing all the way to the finish. He had second was Polanski. It was the second straight day he's got second. He was in the break yesterday as well. And then JJ Rojas, and fourth was DeGent with DiMarchi coming in fifth. The field itself, the peloton, they came into the climb. They looked like maybe they were going to do something. Lutsenko started the climb, kind of pushing the pace. And then Froome's Team Sky just went to the front and had a decent pace. And from there, the cameras really didn't even pay attention to them, and nothing really happened with them. That whole group just rolled across, 8:38 behind the winner. So we have unchanged GC, Froome still in first, Chavez and Orica Scott 11 seconds back in second, Stephen Roach, BMC 13 seconds back in third, TJ Van Garderen at 30 seconds in fourth, and Nibali 36 seconds. So the top Froome is still all within around 1 minute to Froome. Tomorrow, we have stage 8, Helen to Jarque de Cati. It's 200 kilometers. So the riders transfer from the finish of stage 7 today to the start of stage 8, just south, about 200 kilometers. I'm not sure. I imagine that transfer is going to be in a car. It might be a little annoying for them. News and note of that town of Helen. They have a big Holy Week celebration as one of, and their one big industry is caramel candy. So book your flights now. Looks like it'd be fun. Three categorized climbs along the way. You're going to have a Cat 3, and a Cat 1, respectively, with the finish just 3 kilometers after cresting the Cat 1 to the climb to Alto Jarque de Cati. It's at 1,100 meters in elevation. And then they head back east near a coastal town finish. The final climb up the Jarque de Cati first appeared in the 1998 Vuelta, and it has some really steep sections in excess of 20% at times. It's similar to that Stage 5 finish. And you're probably going, because it's around 4 kilometers, but it's got an average gradient of around 11. Now, this is what's reported, as I've said before, the race book and everything else is different. I didn't find this info off the race book, though. I went to some different sources for it. Anyway, this should be quite the punisher. And I expect to see more from Contador, just like assuming his stomach is all right, and from Froome, Chavez, and Woods. These guys, they all seem to excel on the steeper stuff a little better. Woods outright said that after stage 5, where he just said that the steep stuff actually feels like it kind of gives him somewhat of a respite. I don't know. That's an amazing type of rider. But then you're going to have the next tiers to watch is TJ, Rue, Nibali. Although the Peacock of Messina could be part of that front group. You know, he depending on how kind of he's climbing, that punchy stuff can be fine. He's done really well on Angrelu as an example, which we're going to come up here, I think at stage 20. If TJ isn't too damaged from this crash, he should be able to stay up front on that climb. I mean, it's only 4 kilometers, and even with the steepness, to put a shorter climb on there, it might not hurt him too much. Then Saturday, stage 9, Orihuela to Cumbres de Sol, 174 kilometers. Stage 9 route goes right up the coast, and it starts just south of where Stage 8 finished. And this one could look like it might have some crosswind sections because the route map shows it to be right on the water. So, and then you got just two categorized climbs nearer the finish than the beginning, with a Cat 3 that starts at 132 kilometers in, and then the finishing Cat 1 starting at 4 kilometers to the finish. And that's up the Alto de Puig Liarenca. And the finish is right at the 3.7 kilometer distance. The average gradient is about 10.2, and they have a max of over 23. The steepest sections are right near the bottom, but all throughout it just undulates back and forth with some really intense sections in the high teens and low 20s. I was scrolling through one of these GPS that had it, and I swear it said 32 and 34 on some sections. It may just be some erratic GPS data. But anyway, depending on the fatigue and some of these outside influences from the previous stage, stage 8, stage 9, I think will be similar to the results of the previous day, because you've got, once again, kind of like the climb yesterday, the climb on stage 5, it's shorter, it's at 3.5 to 4 kilometer range, it's got some punchy stuff. You're probably going to see it just like those stages as far as the results. Now, it depends, you know, TJ, as an example, is hurt. Some of these other guys, you know, what their fatigue factor is. The only difference really is, well, this would be more like stage 5 because there's no downhill section afterwards. So everyone's going to be basically unloading their tank, you know, right to the top. All right, here locally in Northern California, what do we have going on for races tomorrow and Sunday? We have the Henleyville Road Race. This is part of the California Cup. It's pretty flat. It's got, about 72 miles for most of the big riders. The men's pro one, 72, and the women's pro is 54. We have some masters categories going around 72 as well. It's really quite, I haven't done it in the last 2 years, but there's some little teeny hills on it. There's a feed hill. There's a finish hill, which is a little bit of a climb. It actually makes for a good, my type of punchy finish. It's not, you know, you're still in the big ring, but it's just got a little bit of a kick to it. And for those doing that, good luck. It's one of the last races of the year, road race wise at least. So good luck out there to those. Then on Sunday, we have the Esparto time trial. I don't know. I'm not going to join on that, but others can, and good luck to them. Then the following week, we have a few good races coming up. It's Red Kite Omnium Finals. We have the Masters Crit Championships, and then the Monday Labor Day we have the Giro de San Francisco, which is a pretty good. It's actually a really good race in downtown San Francisco. I don't like some of the road surface, and there does seem to be some nasty crashes that have happened there over the years. But I personally like it. It's got a little hill to it in the back. And anytime there's some sections that make it a little dodgy with cornering, I don't mind as well. I just, no one likes to crash. And like I said, last few years, there's been some dramatic ones. And then on the 9th, you have a new crit coming up here. It's the Jackson Historic Downtown Criterium. I will likely be trying that out. It's got a nice kick to it, some little climbing each lap, which seems to be my little thing. I'm not a climber, but I'm not a climber. So I could handle it on a crit. So anyway, go to Northern California Nevada Cycling Association website, ncnca.org, for all info of these races coming up in the Northern California area. All right, so don't be shy about chiming in, making some comments. You can find us, cycletyler@gmail.com is my email, tyonke, T-J-A-N-K-E on Twitter. You can find us on the web, datadrivenathlete.com is Nate Dunn's website, a lot of good coaching advice. You can also find our team website. And anyway, I hope everyone does well, has a good weekend, get out there, do some riding, check back in on us with the Vuelta and anything else upcoming. I'm looking now for some new interviews, and we will be announcing those fairly shortly, and we'll try to ramp that up once the Vuelta gets done and over and get you some more exciting content. Take care and see you next time.